California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
And we are live here in the studios of 88.5 KRFY for an extra special morning show, because we have folks here in town from all over the place, and we have a special event this evening. KRFY is a co-sponsor of this event. It's called Let's Clear the Air, and it is this evening at 5:30 at the Community Center. And we have the folks that have brought this program together for our community. And so I'm just going to do a quick introduction, and then we'll get to some information about that can inspire folks to attend and really understand kind of what's going on and why we have a Citizens Climate Lobby Sandpoint branch. So I'm going to say hi to Gabrielle Dubendorfer. Good morning, Gabrielle.
Good morning.
And we have, just a second, this is Dr. Steve Gann. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Susie.
And you are the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Geophysics Research. You're a climate scientist.
I am.
Okay, it's very nice to have you here. You're from Richland, Washington.
Yes.
Okay. And we also have John Sandvig.
Right. Hi, Susie.
Hi, good morning. You're an aeronautic business executive.
Correct. Okay. Retired, in fact.
Retired. And you have interest in what the subject we'll hear about in a minute. And we also have Jen Sarawitz.
Sounds great. Good morning, Susie.
I did it. Yay. Thank you. And Jen, you are with the Audubon Washington chapter, and you're the conservation manager of Audubon. Is that kind
yeah,
of
correct? Chapter conservation manager. You
okay,
got it.
Out of Seattle. And we all have common interests here. It sounds like we're going to hear about some of that. But I want to start with Gabrielle. You formed a group here called, and I've been to some of your talks, Citizens Climate Lobby. How did this catch your interest? I know that you have, science is kind of your background too, science and medicine and healing. Why do we have a national branch here in Sandpoint of Citizens Climate Lobby? And I was thinking about the word lobby last night. It's a gathering place. It's also can be an advocacy. So what is Citizens Climate Lobby, and why do we have it here in Sandpoint?
I never thought of the term lobby. That's great. It's a gathering place. that's really the intent of why I decided to form a branch in Sandpoint, because there wasn't any lobby here. And after the election, there was such a huge divide that really puzzled me. And I searched for a while, and Citizens Climate Lobby gave me the opportunity to learn about different political perspectives and how to understand the other side as well. So since climate change is a very important issue to me as a naturopathic doctor, the health impacts of the changing climate are huge. I decided to form a chapter here, and I'm very excited to have the Water, Wind, and Fire Tour be part of our actions.
So just with Citizens Climate Lobby again here in Sandpoint, what did you find initially that caught your interest that really was a little different? Because there's other groups that are addressing this also. What's different? And knowing you a little bit, what caught your interest so much that you, I'm sure you're dedicating a lot of your time to it?
Well, it comes back to the term lobby. Citizens Climate Lobby is lobbying for a practical solution that is a bipartisan solution to address climate change. And since I was really intrigued with this political divide, and I was able to learn about how to understand the other side, what is different here is that we're focusing on solutions that are very practical. One particular one, the carbon fee and dividend, that is hopefully soon, again, proposed as a national legislation to provide market-regulated solutions rather than more regulations, so that both sides of the political spectrum can participate and get active.
Is this something we're going to hear about tonight at the Let's Clear the Air event.
Yes, that's what the main purpose of this event is. And we have these three specialists coming to give the details about that from three different perspectives. So I'm very excited to have that happen. And we also have an invitation-only luncheon where we have leaders from the community for a more private discussion so that we can really lay the foundation for that.
And your goal, Gabrielle, in bringing this event to our community, and I know it's going around this part of the country, at least in the Northwest, the water, wind, and fire tour. What are you hoping citizens come away with? More information, inspiration?
I'm hoping that citizens come away with it to actually have a lobby ground to discuss this important issue, to create more awareness, and then to think about how we can all lobby for national legislation that can bring everybody together for actually promoting solutions rather than being in our own little corners and being divided.
And not only divided, but feeling ineffective and
powerless.
Concerned and powerless.
Yeah.
And it's such a big issue, and it's so incredibly important. There's how many 160 countries right now meeting in Germany about this issue. So it's not something to ignore, but finding ways for all people to come together probably is part of your endeavor here.
And it's an issue of stewardship of the planet that we really can focus on all together, and it doesn't matter what our background is. And that's what really drew me to Citizens Climate Lobby.
I know that in our little promo that we're putting on the air right now for this event, it's, hey, conservatives, hey, liberals, let's come together and find a solution. So that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, let's turn towards our other guests, and let's start with Dr. Steve Gann. So, hi, welcome to Sandpoint. And you have a lot of background in science, climate science. We could quiz you on all kinds of things, but here you are. And tell us a little bit about this tour, how it came together, why, and what you've been doing up to this point. I know you were in Spokane last night.
Yes, there have been other tours, regional tours, in Texas and Alaska, in Southeast U.S. And so that idea was in our minds when we met last March for a regional conference. And so my partner here, John Stanvik, proposed that we do this. And Jen and I said, yeah, let's do it. So here we are.
And you're all with Citizens Climate Lobby.
Is no, actually, Jen is with Audubon, and so okay. This is a partnership.
It's a partnership reaching across the aisle. And what have you found so far in the reaction to people who hear this discussion, this presentation?
Most people are very enthusiastic about it. Last night in Spokane, one person said, "This, if I had known this, I would hear about something so practical and creative, I would have invited five friends to this."
So we have the opportunity to let our listeners know right now that there's something special that's going to happen tonight. It's not just more of doom and gloom. There's actual solutions.
Absolutely. Politically viable and durable solutions.
So what does that kind of look like from a scientist's point of view? Are you 100% behind it? I mean, obviously, you must be.
It's not the only solution to climate change, but it's a big one because it targets fossil fuel emissions. And that's one of the biggest drivers of the warming that we're facing. And it's a pervasive approach, meaning that it addresses all uses of fossil fuels. It doesn't, you know, have to identify specific uses. And so being that comprehensive really appeals to me, too.
So you're saying from the largest usage, which I don't know what that is exactly, but I'll find out tonight, to even small things, and offsetting that in some way? Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. It is a revenue-neutral approach, so all the revenue generated by a price on carbon is returned back to the economy, and that spurs the economy, builds jobs, and also saves lives and reduces carbon emissions.
What is the largest use of or a producer of carbon emissions?
In the U.S., it's kind of a tie now between electrical generation from burning coal, natural gas, and transportation. They're each about 30%. And then buildings come after that.
So transportation, and is that air travel included?
Yeah, that's part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one of the things that just kind of sparked my thought on this is, do you think it's solvable? I mean, you're a scientist. You've been studying this for a while. We hear a lot. Is this, obviously it's a viable solution, but can we overcome this huge challenge?
That's a political question.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I get that.
Technically, absolutely. There are technologies that have been identified to reduce emissions 3 or 4 times what is needed. They're available. They just need to be implemented.
Is the United States behind or in front of taking this leadership role in saving the planet?
It has ceded ground. It could be the leader, but it has ceded ground. And this is our opportunity to retake that ground.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess I would suggest that the answer to that question is a little more complicated. If by has the U.S., you refer to the U.S. federal government, then yes, clearly we've ceded ground, as Steve said. But the U.S. is, more diverse, more complex than that. We believe that there's a lot of action moving to reduce fossil fuel emissions by individuals, by companies, private companies, and by governments, both local, state, county governments that are all moving in the right direction in spite of what the administration directs. So it's a little more complicated answer.
In fact, in Bonn, Germany right now with the climate talks, there is a whole delegation separate from the American government who represent 40% of the American economy, the third largest economy in the world, who are moving towards renewable energy.
I know one of the things that came out of the Paris Accord was the fact that developing countries really need to step up and share the wealth, so to speak, by supporting, not developing, countries like the United States. I guess that's developing.
Developed.
Sorry. Yeah, that wasn't right. Need to step up and help developing countries come up with clean energy solutions with financial aid, basically, and with the United States pulling out, or the United States administration pulling out, because, as you say, 40% are over there right now. 20 different states have said yes to working in this climate. Paris, or Macron, the president of France, has said they will pay the United States portion of the agreed-to amount to offset. Yes, Gabrielle.
I just heard another report about, I lost my train of thought, sorry.
Well, we were talking about the climate thing. And really, we don't want to go too far into, all the stuff that's going on in the world. Thank goodness it's happening, I would say. But we're here because we want to talk about what's going on right here today and tonight, this event, and the opportunity for folks to show up and hear things. And what I really was hoping from this interview is that we would get a sense of what people will experience tonight. So, Jen, tell us, you're part of this program tonight. You must be the air part? The wind part?
The bird, yeah, birds flying through the air. Yeah. You got it. You bet. So, Citizens Climate Lobby is a bipartisan organization working to build political will for a livable world. And Audubon is also a very bipartisan organization. We are friends of birds, as you understand. We've been in the business of bird conservation for over 100 years. But what you may not know is that Audubon, also our membership of over 1 million people across the country, over 450 chapters across the country, including a number of chapters here in Idaho, 52% of our membership identifies as progressive or democratic, and 48% identify as conservative or Republican. And so we really feel we have an authentic bipartisan voice to bring to this discussion, right? So climate change is truly a nonpartisan issue. Birds are a nonpartisan vessel by which to share that message. Our authentic bipartisan messengers, try to carry forth bipartisan policy solutions, of which carbon fee and dividend, as Citizens Climate Lobby will speak to, is one of those solutions. And so that's where Audubon comes into play. In 2014, our National Audubon Society released a report that said climate change is the number one threat to birds. It is a threat multiplier, right? So it affects the habitat and the food supplies and diseases and everything that birds need to survive. We're looking into the future. The science says 314 North American bird species are threatened or endangered with extinction by the end of the century due to global warming. And so we feel that that's a call to action. You've heard the canary in a coal mine thing. So that's real, right? So the miners would take canaries into the mines, and when the canaries dropped dead from the toxic gases, the miners would leave. So that was a signal.
We can't really leave, can we?
No, but we can look to the birds that are already moving. So over the last 50 years, 60% of wintering North American bird species have shifted their ranges northward. So they're moving, and we're predicting them to move even further. And what will the habitat look like towards where they're going? You know, there's just so many uncertainties, and we can do so much in the meantime to slow that change, buy ourselves a little more time to adapt, and also, just decrease the dramatic impacts and the challenges that birds and people are facing, right? What's good for birds is good for people, too. So,
with 314 at risk at this point in time, and this is our atmosphere, this is the same air we're breathing.
That's right. Absolutely. This is a global problem, right? This study focused on North American birds, but certainly, one example, I guess, is what I would say. Birds have been wonderful indicators of environmental health for a very long time. And so, like I said, we look to their movement now, and they're sensitive. They're very sensitive to environmental change. And, we feel a call to action because of what we're seeing and what's predicted to happen.
And with the Audubon Society, as you said, about five times bipartisan, 48-52%, it doesn't matter. There's a common goal, a common interest, and that's what you're looking for.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, Audubon's a little bit unique in that, we're an old school conservation organization, but we carry that authentic, bipartisan voice. And that's really what's needed for these durable solutions. You know, we're out here building durable public will for durable political solutions, no matter what party is in power moving into the future.
Well, that's inspiring right there. So, John, what you've said a little bit about, so which part of the water, wind, and fire do you focus on?
Yeah, our presentation, if people come this evening, and I hope they do, in droves, and everybody invites one of their friends along to it.
Better from yet, across the aisle.
Yeah, exactly. Better yet, if everybody brought somebody with a little bit different political ideas to the meeting. That's really what we seek, a broad spectrum of constituents in the audience. So the presentation is structured with three main parts. We start by talking about the changes that we're seeing in the environment. And we ask for feedback from the community about what they've seen in a changing in climate. And then Steve explains to all of us, you know, what the causes are. So, you know, the science is crucial here. And Steve is one of the world's experts on this topic, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that. And then we get to the okay, so now what do we do part, and that's where we focus on what individuals can do to make a difference, and we have a specific policy proposal that we share with the audience. And I think it's the policy proposal that elicits the kind of response from members in the audience like Steve referred to earlier, which is, wow, if I had known that you were actually going to show us a solution that makes sense and that people across the political divide can get on board with, I would have brought bunches of people here. So, you know, so fair warning, that's kind of where we're headed with our presentation. The policy that we're going to discuss tonight is sort of hinted at when you consider the subtitle of our tour. You know, the tour is the Water, Wind, and Fire Tour, but the subtitle is Saving Our Farms, Forests, and Fish While Strengthening the Economy. And I think you get a hint from that subtitle about what we're going to be talking about. So climate change is the issue. What causes it, and what are we going to do? What causes it is human-generated greenhouse gases. But we have a method to reduce the emissions from burning fossil fuels while also strengthening the economy. So controlling greenhouse gases, strengthening the economy, doing this in a nonpartisan way. Citizens Climate Lobby and Audubon both are nonpartisan organizations, and we believe our policy proposal has bipartisan appeal that both conservatives and liberals can agree with, and we'll show you plenty of evidence that's true. So that's what to look forward to in our presentation.
And Gabrielle?
I want to add to that the policy is effective even if there might be a 0.001% chance that it's not human caused, because it will still clean up the environment and it will foster the economy as well. So that to me is really the bipartisan, especially in North Idaho, aspect that's really attractive about this.
Yeah, I'd say this. I'd reinforce your point in slightly different terms. You know, the issue that we're always presented with in these conversations is, well, you don't really know for sure whether humans cause climate change or not. And I think the three of us, or the four of us, believe that is not true. We know that the data is clear. We know that 97% of professional scientists who have compared the results with one another through a process known as peer review come down on clearly indicating that it's human generated. So that matter is settled for us, for us at least. But we know it's not settled for everybody. There are people who believe that the 3% who don't agree, they have some credibility too, and I personally would not argue with that. What I would say is that 97% of scientists tell us that this is the fact of the relationship humans cause it, which tells me that it's. Maybe it's not 100% certain, but it's very, very, very likely. And if it's likely, and the consequences are dire, which we also know is true, then maybe a risk management approach is a sensible way to think about it.
I think you hear statistics like 97%. It's typical that even most people go with that, because it's pretty clear. I wanted to switch over to the scientific part a little bit, since I am learning as we stand here or are here that, Steve, you are the authority on climate science. Or one of.
One of many.
Yeah, yeah. So what are you seeing in the big, big world as far as hope and joining together and solving this? I mean, it takes a lot of will for a whole community on Earth to make a difference, I think. You have solutions tonight, which I can't wait to hear, and I know that they are solid. But what are you seeing out in the big world as far as, well, look at Jerry Brown. I mean, you know, he's over there in Paris right now, governor of California. So obviously people are moving forward.
Yeah, and certainly the Paris Climate Agreement is huge. It's the first time every nation, all the nations came together and committed to reducing emissions. And it provided a lot of freedom in how they go about that. And so that's moving forward. At the same time, the technologies of carbon-free energy are becoming less and less expensive and enabling this transition from carbon-based energy to carbon-free energy. And so economically, we can do this. And then there's action at all levels. At the personal level, people want to reduce their carbon footprint. At the municipal level, state level. So all sorts of levels are involved with this, and people are coming together.
So hopeful.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a climate scientist, you're feeling hopeful.
Yes, it's clear at this point that the U.S. can actually meet its commitments to the Paris Agreement, regardless of Donald Trump.
That's the good news. I like this one statement on here that says, advocating for political will for a livable world and a strong, healthy economy. I mean, the economy has to be a part of it, and that's what we're going to hear about tonight. So you've come together for the Citizens Climate Lobby here in Sandpoint, brought the tour, which is the water, wind, and fire tour with these wonderful people. And that event is tonight at the community, Sandpoint Community Hall at 5:30. And so we get to hear about it. And I know we have another person in the studio, Amy. And Amy wants to say something. She's just sitting here listening to us.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here. Hi, everybody. I'm Amy Phillips from Sandpoint as well, and I'm organizing this with Gabrielle. But I just wanted to respond to your question, Susie, that this has been done before. Ronald Reagan in the late 80s led a bipartisan coalition and a national coalition to solve the ozone layer crisis. And it's funny because we don't talk about that anymore, but those of us who are old enough to remember that, you know, we thought that the world was going to burn up because the ozone layer was being depleted. So it can be done at a national level. It can be done at an international level if we can just create the will and be willing to consider that maybe there are good ideas out there that don't necessarily come from our side, but should be considered and can be pursued to solve this crisis.
Very good. And Gabrielle, did you have something to add to that?
Actually, I had my report idea again. There was a report about the government delegation putting up in the climate, the climate talks at Bonn in Germany, outside of the talks, put up a talk with reinforcing clean coal as a way to make developing countries more prosperous. And the response was that they really don't want that or need that. In fact, India and China are leading ahead with renewable energies, because to bring fossil fuels into developing countries to make them more prosperous, you need to build up a whole nother new infrastructure, which is not sustainable in the long term. And they understand that. So I just wanted to bring that in here.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I just want to remind the listeners here at 88.5 KRFY that this is a special Friday morning show interview with folks from the Citizens Climate Lobby Sandpoint and folks that are here from Seattle area and Tri-Cities, Richland, with a tour called Water, Wind, and Fire. There will be a community talk, I guess it would be, community conversation, would you call it?
So it will actually, can I add that now? Do we need to wait for
No,
the
add it again.
Yeah. So there will be the presentation from the Water, Wind, and Fire Tour presenters, but then our your last stop here in the tour is going to be special because we also have a panel with two, potentially three presenters in order to really bring the local perspective into this whole issue too and really engage the discussion. So we have Bob Burr from Idaho Forest Group, which is one of the main lumber companies in town. And we have Commissioner Glenn Bailey. Representative Sage Dixon had committed to come, but he had a scheduling conflict, so is not able to come. We're still hoping to get a substitute for him, which is hard to substitute him. But Bob Howard from the emergency Bonner County Emergency Services is considering coming if he can make it. So I'm really excited to have such a varied presentation tonight before we open up to a public discussion, just to really get that bipartisan aspect into the play as well.
And just to mention, this is a free event, really trying to work towards getting all of our citizens, we all have a vested interest in knowing how we can move forward as a community, as a global citizen community also, to save the planet. The one thing that you were mentioning with Bonn, Germany and India and China, Gabrielle, I just wanted to get back to that a moment, is there are clean energy solutions and the infrastructure needs to be put together now. I know China is planning to be off from the coal as soon as possible. I heard 2020, but probably 2030, something like that. And those are within the realms of the climate accord, I think. So why isn't that happening here? Where is the will here in this country? Anyone want to say anything?
Of course, there is opposition. There are vested interests in continuing to use fossil fuel, and they have funded a disinformation campaign to confuse the public about the science of climate change. The public does not agree with the climate scientists' conclusions as much as the climate scientists do. And so this campaign has sowed seeds of doubt about, you know, you hear people say, well, the climate's always been changing, or we can't predict the weather, how can we predict the climate? So there's all sorts of little sound bites that confuse the public about the
But someone's doing consensus. That. You say there's a campaign of disinformation. Mm-hmm. Why would that be when folks have children, grandchildren, and have care for birds? A million people are part of the Audubon Society. Why would there be a campaign for disinformation?
There is money at stake. There's a lot of value in carbon assets that is at stake here for some companies, and so they want to preserve their market, and so they do this, and they have a variety of ways that it's not clear that it's coming from the fossil fuel companies, but that's where it's being underwritten. I have a report, a 3-inch thick book, that looks exactly like an IPCC report, but it's trying to dismiss the science, and it's bogus.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah. Yeah, if, John. If I could just expand a little bit, what we seek is a diminution and eventual elimination of fossil fuels, and you know that's a massive change in our energy economy. I think you can anticipate that. Vested interests, like Steve says, are going to be ill-disposed to embrace that or to volunteer to move there. But that's really what's required to achieve the outcome we need. What's really interesting is that there's a policy available to us that does not impoverish us as a society. There will be a transformation required, and people will have to adapt in industries and so forth. We believe that's going to happen anyway. Eventually, so we may as well do it in an organized, well-managed process, and people will need to change, and we're going to have time to do that if we move rapidly now to start that process.
So I think it's not just the corporations, but it's also livelihood of individuals that is at stake here that's feeding those sentiments. Like, for example, in this area, logging is a major industry, and logging truck drivers would have to pay more money for gasoline if the gasoline goes up. So we have to address these real issues as well as it affects local people. And that's what the discussion is about tonight.
So addressing some of those things with compassion and care. Mm-hmm. We're all in this together.
Well, it's even better than that. I mean, compassion and care, absolutely, positively. But if you take a financial and economic approach, you know, market forces will actually make it happen all by itself.
It's just like we had to switch from typewriters to computers. It's a transition that we have to do. It's inevitable. It's happening already. So there's going to be pain involved. But with a policy like it's going to be proposed tonight, it's doable economically.
Do you have anything to add to that, Jen, from Audubon?
We don't have economic experts on staff that I'm aware of, but we're supportive. Certainly, we've actually been supportive of many different policies on the climate front. So revenue generating policies, revenue neutral policies. I do think, especially in today's political climate, that a revenue neutral policy such as will be presented tonight may have the best chance at moving forward currently.
Yeah, and another thing that's kind of interesting to this discussion is a lot of these companies who we think of being associated with the anti-climate research and anti-climate science are actually on board with this policy. So we're actually seeing GE and DuPont and ExxonMobil and some of these big companies, they see the writing on the wall. They mm-hmm. have their own, they may have been resisting this science for many years, but they also have scientists who are crunching data and they see where this is going. So they would rather be part of a solution that is letting the market forces mm-hmm. drive this, the outcome than be left behind and have it pushed down on them by just a huge government bureaucracy and government regulation. So one of the things that really appealed to me about Citizens Climate Lobby is let's give the market a chance to see if it can solve this problem. You know, we can always come in with a heavy-handed government solution later on if this doesn't work, but there's a lot of economic will to find a solution to this coming from those big companies. And I think one other thing to mention is the program, the carbon fee and dividend proposal that we're going to be proposing has sometimes been called a conservative climate proposal. There are people like James Baker, George Shultz, who come from the Reagan administration, Henry Paulson, Bob Inglis. A lot of conservatives are coming forward in support of climate action generally and this proposal specifically. So for the 75% of Idahoans who recently said in the Idaho Public Survey that they care about climate change and they think it's a problem, and there's, I think it was number, what was it, Gabrielle, 62% of Idahoans want to see climate action. We really encourage those of you who may have felt maybe a little timid about coming out in support of climate change to come out and hear what we have to say and know that there's a lot of other people who are similarly coming around to recognizing this as a real problem that deserves a real solution.
It sounds like it's not political. It's economic.
It doesn't need to be. Somewhere along the way, it got made to be a political and divisive issue. And some of us are just kind of baffled by that because, you know, numbers don't lie. And there's a lot of very smart people like Steve over here who, you know, this has always gotten me. Scientists, I don't think you make that much money, do you, Steve? I don't think you guys are making, you know, ExxonMobil CEO type salaries. So it's easy to understand where the vested interest might come from. The oil companies, et cetera, but it's pretty hard to see where 97% of scientists and 16,000 scientists just came out in the last week and signed basically a dire warning to humanity about this issue. It's hard to see where, you know, what their motivation would be for being untruthful about that data. So really encourage everybody to come out. And Gabrielle and I have said, you know, let's bring a date from across the aisle. Bring your friends and your family who are skeptics. And let's just all try to have an open mind. And I hope I think we all think people will be surprised how practical, pragmatic, and approachable, and really simple this solution is. It's really very doable.
Well, I can't wait to hear about it. So that's tonight at the Community Center at 5:30, hosted by Citizens Climate Lobby Sandpoint. And it's the water, wind, and fire presentation, but there's also the panel of local, across-the-board sort of citizens and experts. And as you just said, Amy, practical solution that's probably simpler than we could ever imagine. And I love the fact that it's nonpartisan and it's for everyone. And there is, so do you all feel hopeful from what you know of all this information we're going to hear tonight?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. We wouldn't be out here if we didn't believe this was going to happen. And we're trying to make it happen sooner.
You know, one of the problems with the whole climate change, and it can be very scary for people, and it's dire, as you say. And this is hopeful, and that's what we're really looking for.
So the hopeful part, and that's the lobby part again. I like how you started that, the image of the lobby with people coming together. It's really a grassroots and grass tops effort to let our legislators know what we want. And it also gives our representatives the security to come out with supporting what many really believe but don't feel comfortable speaking out in public because the support is not there. So the lobby part is for all of us to give pressure on our representatives to support a national policy like that. That really is like an insurance policy. You know, I have three grandkids now, and I would like to make sure that they are able to enjoy the beauty that we experience here in North Idaho 30, 50 years down the road. And I just imagine if they come to me 20, 30 years down the road and say, "You knew that this was going to happen. Why didn't you do something?" I want to be able to say, "I've done something." So that was, I think, probably the main reason for me to form the chapter in Sandpoint.
Well, thank you for doing that. And Steve, you have a...
Yeah, there's another dimension to this that we have not discussed, and that is the international component to it. Some people make excuses for inaction here, claiming that, what about the rest? You know, what about China? But this plan that we are going to be describing tonight has a provision for that leverages the U.S. as a, you know, the world's biggest consumer nation. It leverages that fact to ensure that other countries will follow suit and also put a price on carbon and protect U.S. exports, which, of course, is vital to a lot of people here.
It's a big picture. Well, I want to thank everyone. Anyone want to say anything else? Add something to this wonderful discussion? Okay. I want to thank everyone, Steve Gann, John Sandvig, and Jen Sarowitz.
I answered anything.
Okay, that's good. Gabrielle Dubendorfer and Amy, your last name, Phillips, all from really bringing a program tonight to the Sandpoint Community Hall at 5:30. It is free. It's Let's Clear the Air. It's nonpartisan. It's Bring a Friend. Come and find out hopeful and doable solutions to things that matter to us. So thank you so much, everyone, for coming in. I want to remind our listeners that this podcast, this interview will be podcast on our website at krfy.org. And we are co-sponsors of this event proudly. So thank you for putting it together.
Thank you very much for sponsoring us.
Yep. We're going to listen to a song by Neil Young as we go out and hear the rest of the day Otto's Eclectic Mix. This is Who's Going to Stand Up by Neil Young.